So let's turn our attention now and consider the people of Cleveland, Ohio this week. All of the celebrations and questions and alarm about the discovery and rescue of those three missing girls held captive in a residential home for years. Amanda Berry, missing at age 17 back in 2003, last seen leaving her job at Burger King. Then, a year later, Gina DeJesus disappeared while walking home from middle school. The third victim, Michelle Knight, who went missing in 2002 at age 20. In addition, a fourth girl, a young child also rescued from the home, she's believed to have been fathered by one of the three brothers now under arrest, who allegedly held them captive. Neighbors in the area have expressed shock and awe, many saying they knew the house well, they even knew the owners of the home, never suspected that all along such a crime was being committed inside, but who inspects their neighbors' basements for teenage girls? Joining us now is nationally syndicated columnist Connie Schultz, who lives in Cleveland. Connie, welcome.
Thank you.
I mean, just, how you doing? I mean, how do you even interpret this? I don't have any particular question other than, whoa.
Well, you know, it was interesting even listening to your introduction, because being here in Cleveland, yes, there was definitely celebration, quite literally dancing in the streets by some of the neighbors. But I think that feeling has quickly passed, in part because the more details are rolling out and they only get worse, as you know, in terms of the conditions for these young women. And also there's a lot of soul searching here because of, we've had some history with missing women, as any metropolitan area will have. But in 2009, as you probably know, we had the Anthony Soule case, which made headlines around the world.
Sure.
After they found 11 bodies of African-American women buried at one home on the other side of Cleveland. And at that time, the question was very similar to this question in terms of how did this happen and nobody noticed. And in that case, the house was smelling to high heaven and people were blaming the sausage factory next to it. And it just never even occurred to anyone that this something this awful could happen. A lot happened since then to improve police work and in response to women who are victims of violence. But we hear about this and you can't help but wonder, and some of the neighbors are expressing tremendous regret. I don't think it's any one person's fault, as I wrote in the Washington Post this week, but I think we all can be examining how we build community or don't build community in these days. And I understand that's too light. We can't look at any of this lightly because we don't know enough about all the details yet. The more we know, the more we'll know about what did and did not happen.
And, you know, let me ask you a couple of questions and back me down off of this. We had some tough discussions here at the office trying to figure out what we should say about this story. I mean, on one level, it's kind of like Newtown. I mean, the tragedy is absolutely clear, but the predictive, the signs, the signals, the what do you watch, the who do you screen, all that's very, very difficult. But one thing did occur to me, Connie. I've done so many stories on how Cleveland has had so many difficulties really over the last 20, 25 years, economically speaking.
Sure.
Is it possible that a community gets into a state of kind of collective trauma where your head's down, you're really just sort of trying to survive, and you lose sight of maybe some of the details that are going on next door?
I would hesitate to make this a regional issue because, you know, I live in a suburb to the west of Cleveland. I work in Cleveland all the time, and I've spent my career in Cleveland. But I can tell you that even in neighborhoods where the resources are much greater than the neighborhood in which this tragedy happened, We don't even have front porches anymore. We don't have the sense of community we once had. I was talking to my husband about this earlier this week. You could have this happen four houses down from our house, and I would have known nothing about it because I don't even know the people who live there. And that is as much my fault as anybody else's in this neighborhood. And I think, well, you know, after I wrote the Post piece, I've been hearing from readers around the country, in part because I also moderate discussions on Facebook, so they know how to find me. They're feeling the sense of, you know, the president, the irony of ironies, the president was in Ohio on Sunday at Ohio State talking about how we are not a collection of strangers. And, you know, 24 hours later, a little bit more, this news breaks and it's exactly how we're feeling. But I can tell you that from the reader response I'm getting, a lot of people feel that way around the country. I don't think it's specific to Cleveland in that regard.
Wow. Well, you know, over the next and in a sense, everyone in this story is held hostage now to media interest on all of this. But we are going to hear the stories of Gina DeJesus and Amanda Berry and Michelle Knight. If they say, how come you couldn't protect me, you know, America, what are people going to feel in their hearts there in Cleveland if they hear that from these young women?
Well, I can tell you I've already gotten some pushback from some people in Cleveland who were unhappy with my column yesterday because they said, you know, don't make it sound like we're a town that doesn't care. And that is not at all my position on this. The response to the Anthony Soule murders in 2009 was nothing short of inspiring because it was, you know, it was 11 African-American women who lived in poverty, had criminal records. You know, most people had no idea they were even missing. And the police really neglected the cases that many, many people felt. And the town, not just the town, the entire region of Northeast Ohio, so many people stood tall for the women, for those women victims and women who are victims of domestic violence and survivors. That's really important to use that word, of course. I thought it was so interesting yesterday that the Rape Crisis Center here put out an email blast and the media started reporting that they were offering help to survivors who are feeling all this tragedy and trauma being dredged up again with the reporting of this news. And I think that's something we can't lose sight of. You know, you said you were having these difficult conversations, as I hope all newsrooms are, about this story. And one of them is that there are women across the country who are hearing about what happened to these young women, and they're reliving their own trauma because there are so many ways to visit violence on women. I would hope, I don't, you know, when you mentioned about the women speaking, I really hope I understand how difficult it is to talk about this when you've been through this. I don't understand. I've never experienced something like this. But my concern is that the narrative could get away from them if these women don't have an opportunity soon to tell their stories in their own voices, through their own experiences. And in that way, we can best honor them by not speculating. I'm not accusing you of this. You've been wonderful. But there's some wild speculation out there about these young women already and what they went through and dredging up some stuff from their backgrounds. And I just think that's such a disservice. I don't think it makes us responsible media to do that.
Well, she's the best. Connie Schultz, nationally syndicated columnist, talking about the community in Cleveland, Ohio. Thanks so much, Connie.
Thanks for caring about it.